This is the summary of the Shir, which Rav Lichtenstein delivered actually Parshas Chayesara, Kol Tov, Parshas Chayesara. And it speaks a little bit about what we encounter in Chayesara, but it also bridges to Parshas Toldos. If the sound quality is a little loud, I'm actually at the Kotel, where I daven Maariv, for a special event tonight. And there's a lot of construction, Baruch Hashem, in the Kotel area, and a lot of people collecting stucco, so I apologize if it's a little bit. I just didn't feel like I had the time to sit in a quiet place and get this recording done. Rav Lichtenstein used the story, the narrative of Eved Avram with Rivka, in Parshas Chayesara, to speak to us. This was in 2008, about 10 years ago, about how to choose a shidduch, what to look for in a girl, and how to build a marriage. And the obvious issue which he identified in Parshas Chayesara was Eliezer's employing Sarah's generosity of spirit and her selflessness and her inclination to chesed as a barometer for the type of woman that Yitzchak would be suited for, or be suited for Yitzchak. And it leaps out at you from the text. It's not something which I think is novel about Rav Lichtenstein's presentation, although he dug deep into the question of whether Eliezer violated the Isser of Nichush. A Jew is not allowed to base decisions on arbitrary omens. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin and Chulin, the person sees a stick fall from or a stick break, and that maybe is a portent that something bad will happen that day, and it's an inopportune moment to take some initiative, or if a deer crosses the road, all sorts of omens and portents which are forbidden, in part, as the Rambam says, because it smacks of Avodah Zarah, Hamanachesh Ke'akum, the Rambam writes. And there seems to be some debate as to whether Eliezer violated the Isser of Nichush. Probably the most conventional response in defending Eliezer's behavior is based on Iran. It's also located in Radak. I don't know how many of these Rav Lichtenstein quoted, but I think he quoted the Iran, that Eliezer wasn't basing his decision of Rivka on an arbitrary issue, but on a reflective or characteristic issue. He wasn't saying if the woman that is 6 feet tall or the woman that turns her back to the sun will be the one I choose for Yitzhak. It's the woman that will be generous and forthcoming and offer water. And Varun just added that there are many women who would have performed their duty, because it's a moral responsibility for every woman and every person, but the generosity and the enthusiasm, the willingness not just to provide Eliezer with water, but also the Vigamlik Malacha Ashke. And again, this is something which is fairly common in the way people read Parshas Chayesar. But he used that to bridge to Parshas Toldos. I don't remember if it was a Shal Shudas Sicha, in which case the bridge would have been very appropriate because we had just read Parshas Toldos for Mincha, so it was Parshas Chayesara bridging to Parshas Toldos. I don't remember which one it was, but Parshas Toldos is a separate scene of a man and a woman, and that's Yitzchak and Rivka facing the prospect of their common infertility, not really knowing who was responsible, but just knowing that they couldn't bear children. And the Torah describes the tefillah, Vayetar Yitzchak lenochach ishto. And there's some very interesting phraseology or verbs about Yitzchak's tefillah, Vayetar, and I've spoken about this on other occasions. But what's also striking about this description is lenochach ishto. And Rashi senses this phrase and describes a scene where Yitzchak and Rivka are standing in different parts of the room, in part probably because they didn't want to daven together. Davening requires separation between men and women, even man and his wife. So they probably created some distance. And Rashi says they were looking at one another, and not just looking, but regarding and validating and affirming each other. Yitzchak was amazed at Rivka's righteousness, given her background, it was even more stunning, and Rivka felt fortunate to be in the embrace of Yitzchak and his righteousness, and they were facing the specter of possibly introducing a new woman into the house, which of course wrecked the domestic bliss of Avram's life, the Hagar introduction. They just wanted to avoid that destabilizing scenario. And they're just appreciating each other, lenochach ishto. And Rav Aaron felt that lenochach ishto implied not just where they were standing, but where they were looking. They weren't looking at one another. They were standing facing one another, but looking towards HaKadosh Baruch and Tefillah. And to highlight the point, Rav Lichtenstein quoted a really beautiful quote in the name of a 20th century French author named Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the author of The Little Prince, but he wrote as follows, and it's a really beautiful quote. He writes, "Life has taught us that love does not consist in gazing at each other, but in looking outward together in the same direction." I'll repeat the quote again because it's a little bit loud, but it's such a beautiful quote. "Life has taught us that love does not consist in gazing at each other, but in looking outward together in the same direction." And I'm now a quote of Lichtenstein. "The love between man and woman arises from more than each admiring the beauty and character of the other. It arises mainly from their joint observation, understanding, and appreciation of a third, additional reality, which is loftier and mightier and more wondrous than themselves. What reality could be greater, more enriching, and of greater significance than the reality of God? Therefore, one of them stands on one side and the other on the other side. The eyes of both are lifted heavenward towards God. Each prays for him, herself, and his, her spouse, and together they are answered and they grow spiritually." There's just such a powerful image of how to build a shidduch, that you're not only in love with each other and your gazes aren't only swallowed in each other's eyes, but you stand opposed from, not opposed, but a different, near one another, and you look commonly to something greater that can, more loftier, that can enrich this unit of the marriage. In this case, it's to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Navarin used this as a springboard to describe how to choose a spouse and to assure that you're not just choosing based on her characteristics and her midos and, of course, the love that has to exist between the two parties, but also based on the way in which you each value your ideals and are willing to sacrifice for your ideals. So let me read some of how Rav Aaron described it to us. "The choice of a spouse pertains not only to Yitzchak, but each and every one of us." Okay. "The choice of a wife involves two important areas: fulfilling Torah mitzvos and a couple's relationship. In terms of Torah mitzvos, there is the personal level and the family level. On the personal level, the question is whether a woman wants her husband to go out and work once in a while attending a shiur or opening a gemara, or whether it is important to her that her husband devote his free time to immersing himself in the world of Torah and developing his personality." That's on a personal level. Does a woman want her husband to be engaged in Torah? And in the end of this, Sichai talks about women's learning as well, because this is given 10 years ago when women's learning had already begun to penetrate. On a family level, Rav Aaron continues, "the question is whether the couple wants their children to be just nice, or whether the trait of I shall water your camels also is inculcated in them. Will they become part of a secular environment, or will they be immersed in the Torah environment of the parents' home?" And Rav Aaron continues, "Torah study," this is very, very powerful words, "can affect a couple's relationship negatively or positively. From the negative perspective, Torah study can generate loneliness. The husband sits immersed in his Gemara, while at home the wife sits feeling alone and miserable, not understanding and not interested in what her husband is doing. This sort of atmosphere can affect the husband's learning worse. It can damage the couple's relationship. A more positive perspective would be that the husband studies in the Beis Medrash. The wife is happy that her husband is occupying himself with Torah. Even better if the husband is studying Torah and his wife too is sitting with an open Gemara in front of her. Then together they encounter the exalted reality of God in the Torah and bring up and educate their children accordingly." I just thought that these were some very poignant statements, and Rav Aaron drew it from this image that Rashi develops of Yitzchak and Rivka standing, not just looking at each other, but being able to jointly appreciate a loftier, higher reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In this case, they sense Hashem's presence. Rav Aaron was talking about it in terms of the role of Talmud Torah within a family, and whether the husband's learning is completely, completely underappreciated and in no way affects a woman, or whether there's a common identification and doesn't cause loneliness and alienation. And I think that for a lot of people, this is one, probably not the primary issue of women's Torah education, but one of the reasons. The primary issue for women's education is for women to be educated and for them to have a deeply religious and spiritual life, independent of marriage. Women's definition can't be solely funneled through marriage. But part of women's education, and this is why I think it's important to expose women even who aren't going to enter Torah study for long term to be teachers or yoetzot or other forms of Torah guidance, I think it's important for women to understand the full sweep of Torah, not just Tanakh, but Torah Shebaal Peh. Because not only is there a level of richness and depth that we want women to be exposed to, but I can't conceive of a marriage in which a man is intensely pursuing the beauty of Torah Shebaal Peh, and a woman has absolutely no clue of what that world offers. So it's an interesting sicha, and a lot of interesting ideas about how to choose a shidduch. And I apologize, it's so loud. You get to hear some of the sounds and backgrounds of the old city.